This is Akashvani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on India's march towards poverty alleviation. The participants are Shubhamoy Bhattacharji, economic analyst, and Ruchika Chitravanshi, journalist.
Hello and welcome to the Money Talk. In today's program, we are discussing the latest report by the World Bank that says that India has lifted 171 million people out of extreme poverty. I'm sure, Shubhamoy, you have seen and read the World Bank report. I wanted to first ask you, how do you see the findings of this report and how do you think going forward its findings will inform our policy decisions?
That's interesting about the policy decision. Let's take that first. According to me, the trend of the report is not surprising. The numbers one can debate. If I look at the data, both numbers are calculated on the basis of the $2.15 a day as well as the $3.65 a day. It is not surprising that the poverty rate has come down and accumulated over 10 years. That actually is something that anybody who's been watching the Indian economy would agree that yes, it's been happening. Which way it's been happening and how significantly has the changes happened? That is something that we could talk about later. But yes, I'm not surprised. Of course, in India, you know, when you look at numbers of people in India, so 171 million people seems, oh my God, how did we actually manage to do that?
Yeah.
But then if you look at the way that India's population figures, this is par for the course. So it's a very impressive achievement, but it was something that was building up. So that's where it is.
In the monetary terms, how we see 3.65 per day, the report says that India is now transitioned into the lower middle income category country as well. It talks of multidimensional poverty and we have improved ourselves a lot over there. Now, something's to be said about the way the data is also collected and how extensively World Bank collects this data from various independent sources. How do you think this process is? Can you tell our listeners? How does the World Bank get to these conclusions and what more can be done to make this more robust?
As you would be aware, the World Bank by itself doesn't collect the basic data. The World Bank depends on government sources and, of course, others for getting the data. And based on that, the World Bank goes about it. So its first port of call is, first of all, the socioeconomic census, which was done in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, of course, we have got the consumption expenditure survey, we have got the National Health Family Survey. You know, there are all these reports that come. Those surveys have been happening. So what's happening is that the World Bank takes the data that is available. I mean, World Bank doesn't go in for primary data. The World Bank picks up the data from government agencies. Mm-hmm. And based on that, then it uses its own interpretation, which it tends to be across same across the countries, to arrive at all the numbers that it shows. So one significant point about here is how well are the government agencies doing the data? And as you know, we haven't had the 10-year census as of now. But what the interesting thing is that we have also been having other data.
Yeah.
The Household Consumption Expenditure Survey, which comes up every 5 years, is a very significant source of data. In fact, it's very rich in terms of understanding how poverty trends and others happen. There's also the data that comes up in the other ministry data sources that comes up. For instance, the Rural Development Ministry's data, that comes up with very good set of indicators of income. And that is actually turning up now as a sort of a very rich source of data, which was not available earlier.
Yes.
So over the last 10, 15 years, those numbers have actually started building up a very impressive set of numbers to analyze India.
Yeah.
So yes, that's where we stand.
True. We also have the NFHS, which probably World Bank can look at. That data also comes, though it is with a bit of a lag. And just for the benefit of our listeners, when we talk of multidimensional poverty components, World Bank, what does it look at? It looks at whether you have access to electricity, sanitation, drinking water, primary education. And of course, one of the data they've highlighted is not available is at least one school-aged child is not enrolled in school. That data, it says, is not available. Now, Shubhamoy, a lot of things you've highlighted. One of the things that the report has said is that there are persisting challenges of gender disparities and also the wage disparity it has talked about. how the median earnings of the top 10% are 13 times higher than the bottom 10% in 23-24. How do you think we have to deal with this?
Yes, that's something which comes up persistently. However, while I am very, very interested in looking at the multidimensional poverty index, on the wage disparity between the top 10 and the bottom 10, you know, I have a different look on it. See, the way it happens is, for instance, let's look at India's caste structure in terms of oppression and things. Now, when you look at those, that's very interesting data that comes up, both anecdotally as well as in terms of measurements, is that if you look at the lowest caste groups, their problem is with the intermediate castes, mm-hmm. not with the top ones. Why? Because in terms of the spatial dispersion of people staying in any particular place, the caste groups, it's like a continuum. So essentially, the ones who are just below a particular group tend to find those who are just above them dominating their life chances. So applying the same logic, the persons who are at the bottom 10% aren't particularly comparing them, or it isn't worth comparing them with what's happening at the top 10%. Those are very interesting from the point of view of, you know, trying to measure, as you said, 13 times more. But that really doesn't tell us much. What it does, or what it needs to be looked at, is, for instance, what's happening to the, say, the 10% out there, that bottom 10% or the bottom 20%, and compared to them, what's happening with the next 20 or the next 30. So what's happening, say, up to, say, 70% of the population? Is that, within that, how far is the income inequalities present? Are there sharp differences among those? And, you know, those are very significant, because when people feel that they have been shortchanged in life's chances, or when they feel that, you know, the benefits of, say, development or, say, water supply, electricity supply, housing supply, those are reaching them or not reaching them, they compare with their neighbors.
Yeah.
They don't compare with the person who's a remote possibility, a remote person in a city living in one part of, say, the souths of, say, Delhi or Mumbai or Kolkata or Chennai. It is exactly this difference. And that is where one should look at how inequality is actually working out and whether those are numbers are coming up. Unfortunately, the World Bank data can't be used for that sort of a measurement.
Yeah.
For that, we'll have to use on for more domestic sources of data, including the Ministry of Statistics, as well as the state level, where actually they are not collecting data. In fact, that's a very major weakness that we have.
Mm.
The state level collection of data is actually very weak in most of the states in India.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, the data you've highlighted will be of much more use also. This is good to, you know, make a data point out of it of top 10 and bottom 10. But what you're talking about actually would help our policymakers also address these issues more effectively. Of course, states also, what you're saying, states need to do a much better job, especially for a country the size of India, to collect data. The report has highlighted 5 most populous states that accounted for more than half of the extremely poor in India. They have shown improvement. How do you see the state performance, especially for UP, Maharashtra, Bihar, West Bengal and Madhya Pradesh?
That's right. In fact, that is where now, based on the World Bank estimates, the policy direction should move into. So it's no point now to look at in India poverty as a national issue. I mean, obviously, if you're saying that extreme poverty has come down to 2.3%, or even if usually the 3.65, it has come down to something like 5.3. But that applies to, there is a large difference among the states. And the 5 states that he talked about, Maharashtra, UP, Madhya Pradesh, Bengal and Bihar, these are the states where the numbers would be much worse. And that's where the action needs to move. So both at the central government level and certainly these states, there has to be a much more directed action on seeing what is it that is keeping people there poor. Because what it means now is a state like Tamil Nadu, its numbers would be no way comparable to Bihar. So there's no way that you can measure the benefits or what needs to be applied in a state like that, or a state like, say, Kerala, versus what's happening in West Bengal. They are almost like different countries, if one may say so. In fact, this report is very welcome, because what it does is it allows the policymakers to say, hey, I've got a problem in some of the states which are very difficult states, and these states need extreme amount of government support of all sorts to ensure that the population there makes a significant transition. And that is what I think a very major policy implication of this report.
One of the things you said that we should talk a bit more about, and that does make sense also, is the multidimensional poverty index. Instead of going for this per day figure, what the PPP they call, the India's non-monetary poverty, how do you think we should be measuring it? Are you satisfied with the way the parameters are right now?
Well, I'll leave the measurements to experts to say whether we are actually taking in and measuring all the factors that needs to be taken in. For instance, you pointed out that education is one of those which has not been measured adequately. Mm-hmm. And one should take that on board. But whatever is coming along, this is where the action has to be. I mean, it's no point saying to the population today that your condition is far better than what it was, say, 30 years ago. Okay. What is important for them, once they have got the basics of life, and the government must be commended for having done that, that extreme poverty, deprivation of food, the so-called hunger, those have been taken care of. And those are very significant achievements of the government.
Absolutely.
What now needs to be taken on board is the aspirational goals of the people. So health, the person gets food, but what type of food is the person getting? What sort of living condition are they getting? Electricity, for instance, is something which is so significant to anybody's life. I mean, you shut off electricity for a person, that person is essentially dead. In modern world, there's no way you can survive without electricity.
Yes.
So how easy or how difficult is it for a person, because of the multi-dimensional poverty index, to get access to electricity? Similarly, quality of the water. Water is reaching people. The drinking water mission is, I think, a very significant intervention which is going to have a very powerful impact on the people's life. So those need to be monitored very carefully, that what are the life chances that's happening now. I would include, in fact, something more, which is transport. It doesn't often get highlighted, but in India, country with a huge territory, availability of transport at reasonable cost, from where the person stays to where the person works. It's not just about, for instance, for the children. It's not a question of just being able to send them to the nearest place where there's some sort of education.
True.
But a good school, how do the children commute? I think transport costs are very important. People do spend a lot because they need and they realize that that's important for them.
In fact, for women also, this issue was highlighted before, you know, the gender disparities would probably be addressed if there is safe, affordable transportation available.
Absolutely. Let's look at any of the metro cities. If you look at the fact that why a large number of women in the poorer districts of those cities do not travel for work is because by evening, their conditions of transport, both in terms of the safety as well as the numbers of vehicles and the frequency, the fares and everything, are available. I mean, how much they're available makes a huge difference. So those are the things I think which needs, and hopefully now, with the extreme poverty having been reduced, these are the places where the policymakers' attention would be focused on. And I think that those are really what people get agitated about, want to be addressed, and as you can see, are also coming up in different state of elections and others as issues that people want to be addressed.
Yes. Well, Shubhamoy, that is such valid points that you've made. And I'm sure the listeners have enjoyed listening to your insights as much as I have. You made a very strong point about how poverty no more is a national issue for India, but we need to address it in states at a very micro level with very targeted approach. And we have to keep in mind the aspirational goals of India as we are trying to become a developed country. And it's not just about the most basic necessities that we used to talk about, roti, kapra, makan. It's so much more that an Indian wants now, that wants to live in a developed India. Thank you so much, Shubhamoy, for joining us today. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you.
You are listening to a discussion on India's March Towards Poverty Alleviation. The participants were Shubhamoy Bhattacharji, economic analyst, and Ruchika Chitravanshi, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.